Clyde's brown eyes pierced my soul as he looked at me. I widened my stance and readied myself for his words. He spoke in a gentle whisper, but with a serious tone.
You're at a special time in your life, son. You might say that you're ending one phrase and starting another. What direction you play this phrase in is completely up to you. And don't ever think that it's not. This is important. It's time for you to take control of your life and for you to accept that it is you who's in control. You understand?
He took a step back and continued.
You see, most musicians play a bunch of notes in hopes that a good phrase comes out. That's all right, but it ain't the best way. If you keep your mind on the feel, the shape, or the purpose of the phrase, all the right notes will come out on their own. This is how we talk, ain't it? We don't pay no attention to every word unless we has to. It's the feeling, the meaning that's on our mind. You can get all messed up if you try to pay attention to every little note. You can do it like that if you wants to. Ain't nothing wrong with it, but it don't make much sense to me.
He lowered his head, shaking it from side to side. So you're in control of the phrases, but you release your control of the individual notes?
But I can control them notes, too, if and I want to, or if and I don't.
Taking his seat again, he pulled his harmonica out of his pocket and used it to gesture.
I use control and no control at the same time. 'Cause see, if in your phrases keep coming out wrong, you may need to go down to the level of the individual notes to see what the problem is. You understand? If you just think about how you talk, it all makes sense. Add this system to the way you play and the way you live your life, and you'll be all right.
All of a sudden, when I finally felt as though I was starting to comprehend what was being said, a thought from an earlier conversation entered my mind, pushing all understanding aside. But wait a minute, I shouted. Michael, just a few minutes ago you were telling me something about time being my perspective. Then, Clyde, you were talking about how precious little time we have on this planet. Now that seems like a contradiction to me. I'm confused again.
That's 'cause you can't hardly believe anything that Clyde says.
Michael snickered.
What? Why not?
Because he'll probably tell you something wrong. Something exactly the opposite of what I say.
Well then, who should I believe?
Don't listen to that fool. Listen to me.
Uncle Clyde mocked with a smile.
I only tells the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
No! You should only believe what I say!
Don't believe nothing he say.
Wait a minute. You guys are really confusing me. I don't know who to believe or what to think anymore.
Perfect,
Michael stated, nodding his head at me.
Perfect,
I answered. They were feeding my frustration.
How is that perfect?
You don't need to believe none of us. You need to listen to us. That's all.
Well, then, who do I believe?
Well, then, who do you believe?
They almost answered in unison. They knew I hated that type of answer, so I just glared at both of them.
Who makes your decisions for you?
I do.
That's right, son.
Then who do you believe?
Michael asked again. Michael was irritating me, and he knew it. Glancing back and forth between the two of them was compounding the effect. I stood there for a moment trying to compose myself before I answered. Looking back on it, I see what they were doing. Their antics helped me form my own conclusion.
I guess I should believe myself.
That's right, son.
Michael patted me on the shoulder and nodded.
Very good. I can tell you have more to say about that. What is it?
Michael kept his hand on my shoulder, which helped me relax. I felt inspired, so I spoke.
I should listen to all that you or anyone else has to say. Then I make up my own mind. I choose what I want to believe. And if I'm having trouble figuring out what the truth is, what my truth is, I ask questions, listen, and let experience talk to me.
I had it, and I knew it.
Bingo!
You ain't half as bad as Michael says you was.
Michael stepped over and stood between Clyde and me. It was his turn to stand as close to me as he could. His green eyes twinkled as he spoke.
If you believe what we say all the time, you may never come to your own realization. And your own realization is the only realization there is. If we tell you different things, you will be forced to decide for yourself. And your own decisions are the only decisions you should ever make. But when you can't decide, you will have to rely on experience. If you have no experience to draw from, trust your feelings. That is always best because your feelings are the only ones that will always speak the truth. If you are still unsure, test all the theories to see which one works. Oftentimes, you will find that more than one will work, but that still leaves you with the decision to make. Your decisions are best made by you and no one else.
Clyde stood up and pushed Michael aside. He waved his hands at him, saying,
"The kid just said that, Michael, and with less words, too. You were always the wordy type. Let me talk to the boy."
Uncle Clyde walked over to me and stood with his nose to mine again to emphasize the importance of what he was about to say. It still surprised me to see him move with such grace after the slow aged way he moved when I first met him.
"You just need to listen to all of it, son. Keep your mind open to all the information that helps you make the best decisions. One bad decision today can cause you to end up way off course later on down the line. You understand, son?"
"I do, Uncle Clyde."
"Good. Don't forget it then."
I liked Uncle Clyde. His mannerisms were very different from Michael's. Although Michael was a born clown, it was Clyde who made me want to smile every time he spoke. Clyde's demeanor reminded me of a Stradivarius violin. The older it gets, the sweeter the sound. And what he had to say was music to my ears.
"Why do they call you Uncle Clyde anyway?"
He slowly took his seat before replying.
"Because I is related to everybody. You see, Brother Clyde or Father Clyde sound a bit too religious to me. Plus, they don't quite have the same ring to it as Uncle Clyde do. Both Cousin Clyde and Grandpa Clyde sounds pretty cool, but I's older than your cousin and younger than your grandpa. Now, that's all I's going to say about that. I's tired of talking. Michael, listen here. Go over there and pick up that guitar. Kid, you grab the bass. Let's make some music."
1, 2, 3.
Measure 10. Space. Rest.
Life is a lot like music. You gotta put some rest in there.
0.
What?
0.
What about it?
It is a mysterious number, my child.
So?
What does it mean to you?
It means nothing to me.
Exactly. It means nothing. But it also means the most.
A few days had gone by since I'd last seen Michael. The time we'd spent with Uncle Clyde was an eye-opening experience, and our all-night jam had left me wanting more. Listening to those two guys play together was like hearing two brilliant minds speak on any subject they chose. Sometimes I could understand what they were saying, but most of the time I just sat there in awe, enjoying their interactions. I spent the next few days practicing my bass, waiting for either one of them to return and answer the questions I still had. Knowing that Michael would often show up unexpectedly, I hadn't left the house for fear of missing him. On the third day, I awoke feeling tired, bored, and lonely. I picked up my bass, but immediately knew I was in no mood to practice. Trying to escape my troubled thoughts, as well as get some fresh air, I placed the bass on the floor, put on my shoes, and hopped in the car. Driving has always been good for my mind. It seems to put it in a good space. That day, however, I didn't want to be gone for too long, so I cut my drive short and headed to the nearest bookstore to see if I could find anything else by Tom Brown Jr. I was hoping to make a quick stop, but my plans were thwarted by a most intriguing character. As I walked through the entrance of the store, a woman rivaling Michael's peculiar appearance grabbed my arm. I knew my day was about to get very interesting.
"Zero, I say,"
she repeated, her long purple nails gripping my arm.
"It means the most, no?"
"What are you talking about? No, it doesn't mean the most," I answered, looking down on her. "It means nothing. The first number is the number one. Before that, you have zero, which is nothing." I don't know why I continued to indulge her by answering. It seemed a futile exercise.
"You are correct, but you are also wrong,"
she replied, looking up at me through her glasses and offering a curious smile. I shook my head. The conversation had just begun, and I was already frustrated. I didn't have time for her. I was in a hurry. All I wanted to do was make a quick stop in the bookstore and get back home. I hoped that Michael would be dropping by, and I didn't want to risk missing him. Well, life had another plan for me that morning, and Michael would have to wait, because just inside the entrance of the store, I found myself engaging in a strange conversation with a very strange lady about, strangely enough, nothing. Just inside the front door of the bookstore was a small table with one chair. The table was covered with a purple fabric, and on it sat a crystal ball surrounded by a circle of cards that were either blank or facing down. A single candle stood burning in the corner. The amazing Isis, seer of past, future, and now. Also, free gift wrapping, the sign on her table read. Like I said, she was strange. She was also short, very short. I guess she stood about 4.5 feet tall, in heels. Standing there in front of her, I could imagine what Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz must have felt like towering above the Munchkins. I thought about clicking my heels 3 times, but knew that it wouldn't get me home any quicker. Isis spoke with a heavy accent, Russian, I guessed, which required me to listen closely to every word. The way she looked up at me through her black-rimmed glasses reminded me of a cross between a schoolgirl and my grandmother. I could envision myself carrying her books and at the same time see her scolding me for not doing my chores. Her clothing was as odd as Michael's. She wore a long flowing purple dress wrapped in beads and bells that rang and clanked when she moved. Covering her shoulder-length brown hair was a non-matching purple bonnet laced with flowers. It was the old-fashioned type of hat that seemed to come right out of a Southern Baptist church. Her feet were partially hidden by the hem of her dress. Though I couldn't see them, I could tell by the sound that she was wearing ankle bracelets. Perhaps the funniest part about her appearance was her beauty mark. Just to the left and underneath her bottom lip was a big black mole. There were 3 hairs sticking out from it, all thick enough that one could easily see them. Her mole bounced around whenever she spoke, reminding me of the musical bouncy ball that's used on television to help people follow along with the words of a song. I hoped it would help me too,
because I was sure having trouble on my own. As soon as I'd walked through the door, Isis stepped in front of me. When I tried to walk around her, she grabbed my arm to stop me from passing. I guessed that she needed someone to talk to, and I was the lucky victim. I was used to these types of conversations with Michael, and I knew that grin. But standing there with that short, peculiar lady put me in unfamiliar territory once again. And although a little irritated, I was eager to find out where the conversation was heading. Okay, please explain.
Yes, let us have a look.
She walked around the table and took her seat behind the crystal ball, placing both hands on the table.
You are correct. The one is the number coming after zero, but is one the first number?
Okay, zero is the first number. I'll give you that, but it still means nothing.
What happens then if you put nothing after the number one?
She turned over a card with the number one written on it and slid it toward me. Nothing happens. You still have the number one.
Oh, no, you don't.
What do you mean? She turned over another card, this one with a zero on it, and placed it to the right of the one card.
Put a zero after the number one, and you have 10.
Well, I stammered, trying to think of something clever to say. She sat back in her chair, allowing me time to ponder the thought. I was already tired of her smile. She had me, though. She was right. I'd never thought about it until then. The number zero, when placed after any other number, is like multiplying that number by 10. Zero is more than nothing.
Yes, it is.
I gave her a surprised look. She broadened her smile, causing her mole to rise. Her mannerisms reminded me of Michael's. The things Michael had to say were always so interesting that his victorious smile no longer bothered me. But seeing her with the same look was a little bit scary. I knew that I could never win an argument with Michael, but it never stopped me from trying. He always seemed amused by my efforts and was forever baiting me with tidbits of information. Like a carrot dangling in front of a donkey, I guess it kept me moving forward. Right then, I felt that she was doing the same thing.
So you see, what this shows us is that zero is a powerful number. But actually, it is more than a number. It is a principle. It is the principle that allows all the other numbers to exist and expand. Zero is like the base, the foundation. Without it, there would be no other numbers.
Wait a minute. I wasn't sure what I just heard her say. Was she talking about a base, B-A-S-E, or a base, B-A-S-S? She gave me no time to ask.
So, I propose this thought to you. The number zero is actually superior to all the other numbers, and here's why. The numbers 1 through 9 always represent something. They can never represent nothing. Zero gets to represent something and nothing. Like the base, it usually goes unnoticed, but it can be on the bottom and on the top. It is this fact that makes it complete.
I didn't totally understand it, but it was interesting. I still wasn't sure if she was talking about a base or a base. I started to ask, but she put a finger to her lips and then to her ear, indicating that I should shut up and listen. There was only one chair at her table, and she was sitting in it. Moving closer to her, I stood opposite and above her as she spoke. I felt like a giant looking down as she flipped her cards and occasionally looked up at me. Although I towered over her, I knew that I was the underdog in the situation. Her outlook on zero was enough to make me forget why I'd come to the store in the first place. Somehow, I sensed, there was a correlation to music, although I hadn't yet figured out what it was. Isis showed me other interesting things about numbers, like how the numbers 1 and 9 are related. The number 1, when added to itself, will always increase by 1. Ascending scale, while the number 9, when added to itself, will decrease by 1, descending scale. For example, 1 plus 1 equals 2. 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 3. 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 4. 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 5, etc. 9 plus 9, repeated, produces numbers with descending values in the ones column. 9 plus 9 equals 18. 9 plus 9 plus 9 equals 27. 9 plus 9 plus 9 plus 9 equals 36. 9 plus 9 plus 9 plus 9 plus 9 equals 45, etc. In multiplication, she related 0 to the number 9 because both always revert back to themselves. Any number multiplied by 0 always equals 0, and any number multiplied by 9 always results in a number that adds up to 9. I already knew that the number 0 would revert back to itself, but I never realized how 9 does the same thing. For example, 1 times 9 equals 9. 2 times 9 equals 18. 1 plus 8 equals 9. 3 times 9 equals 27. 2 plus 7 equals 9. 4 times 9 equals 36. 3 plus 6 equals 9. And so on. She showed me more eye-opening things about numbers that day, such as how each depended on others to exist. She told me that each number, while displaying its own unique characteristics, also possessed qualities similar to those of its brothers and sisters. She was able to show the similarities between numbers and people, too. I never figured out which numbers were male and which were female, but she seemed to think that there was a difference. A lot of her information was interesting and different, but what intrigued me most was listening to her talk about zero. She kept relating it to the base, B-A-S-S, or maybe it was the base, B-A-S-E. I still couldn't tell. I just kept listening.
Like the members of a band, all the numbers have unique and important responsibilities. Zero is the yin-yang number. It represents opposites, something and nothing, fullness and emptiness, big and little, power and weakness, bottom and top. It is not a coincidence that its shape is round. A circle is the shape of space. It has no beginning and no end. Many masterful things possess this shape. It is a holy shape. It is also the shape that all things eventually revert back to. Even a straight line, if continued long enough, will in due course make a circle.
It is also the shape of your mole, I thought. It was about all I could focus on, the way it bounced around. She looked up at me with a frown, but didn't comment. Even with Isis, I'll have to remember to watch what I'm thinking.
Like a black hole, a vortex that sucks in on one side and spits out on the other. Zero has the ability to show us both sides of something.
It was a bit unnerving how much she reminded me of Michael. It wasn't just her mannerisms or her outlandish appearance. What she said and the way she said it seemed peculiarly familiar. Somehow, I knew that all the number stuff would circle back around and relate itself to music. I didn't quite understand all she talked about or why she was talking to me about it, but she held my attention. I'd never looked at zero that way. For that matter, I hadn't looked at any number that way. Her erratic movements let me know that she was excited just talking about it. Peering into her crystal ball, she continued, this time in a softer, more mysterious tone.
Zero is like space, you see? It is the base of all things, and from within this space, all power comes forth. A scientist looks close enough at an atom, and what does he find? Space!
Her arms flailed when she said that word. I thought back to my high school science class, trying to remember anything I'd learned about atoms. I remembered my science teacher saying something about an atom consisting of a nucleus, protons, neutrons, and maybe something else, but that it was mostly filled with space. Or maybe he was talking about molecules. I couldn't remember. That left me with no way to dispute Isis's information. so I didn't try. I knew that there was no way I could manipulate her. Trying to manipulate four bass strings had already caused me years of struggle.
Strings? You want to talk about strings theory?
Oh, no, I replied, realizing once again that my thoughts might not be mine alone.
Okay, then. We will stick with numbers and music.
So you were talking about music. My eyes opened wide. Once again, she pressed her fingers to her lips.
Listen, the same way a luthier looks inside a violin, what does he find? Space! Look inside the bass, and what do you find? More space! But what does come out of this space? Music, you see. Split an atom full of space in the wrong way, and bang! You can be certain of what will happen.
She stood up and thrust her arms in the air.
But there is no need to do that. If the scientist could also look inside your mind, what would he find? He would find nothing but space. The same space found inside of that powerful little atom that can also be found inside your mind. This should give you an idea of the power your mind possesses. It is in the nothingness of your mind that infinite power resides. So the next time you say that you have nothing to do, you should recognize the potential power in that statement.
She looked up with a smile and winked at me, then lowered her head and continued gazing into her crystal ball. Are you saying that my mind is more powerful than an atom bomb? She looked at me and tilted her head in a way that only a loving mother could do.
Oh, my child, an atom bomb is designed to do one thing and one thing only. But your mind is designed to be unlimited. From the nothingness of your mind, all things of this world and other worlds are born.
Other worlds? I had no idea what she was talking about. She was on a roll that I couldn't stop, so I filed it away in my mental vault and just kept following the bouncing ball.
Anything can be found within your mind. That is where all music lives, in the space. Emptiness is the key. Think of something and then surround it with emptiness. One big zero. Your intention is enough to do the rest. Your mind does the shaping, yes, but your mind creates nothing, no more than your bass creates music. So, no more trying, only space. Trying to make something happen is like trying to walk a straight line when the policeman asks you to.
I remembered Michael using the same policeman example. I didn't know if it was a coincidence or if Isis and Michael had somehow coordinated this chance meeting. I started to ask her about it, but she continued talking.
That is a mistake many people make when trying to enter into the world of conscious creating. You are creating everything anyway, so when you try too hard, you push it away. Again, the keys to everything can be found in space.
I was following some of what she was saying, but not all of it. Like talking to Michael, it was hard keeping up with the countless bits of information coming from Isis, but I tried my best. And also, like Michael, she had a way of staying slightly ahead of me. Not wanting to miss anything, I struggled to keep up. I guess they could both pull me further along that way. Isis talked for a while longer, relating numbers to everything she could think of. I forgot about the time and willingly listened. When she was finished, I wandered around the bookstore in a daze, trying to make sense out of anything she'd said. Once I'd remembered what it was that I'd originally come for, I found the book, paid for it, and walked back to Isis's table. Even though I was buying the book for myself, something caused me to go back over to her again. Maybe it was to get my purchase gift wrapped. Maybe I somehow knew she had more to say. Maybe it was I who had more to say, or maybe it was the way her long purple fingernails dug into my arm as I tried to sneak past. Whatever it was didn't matter to her. She made sure that I listened. Holding me with one hand, she grabbed her chair with the other so she could stand on it. Now looking me in the eye, she continued her lecture.
Listen, my son, what I tell to you.
Her nails were piercing my flesh, forcing me to pay close attention.
You don't understand me now, what I tell to you. But one day it will all make sense. Listen to the numbers, my child, all of them, and understand the importance of zero. Only then will you truly understand the power of space. Whatever you hold in your mind, don't let disrupting thoughts get in the way. Place your thoughts in the middle of a big fat zero. Like the nucleus of an atom, this is powerful. When you learn to place yourself in the center, surrounding yourself with this power, this space, then whatever you choose is certain.
She paused, looking up to her right as if she was remembering or maybe receiving a thought. Then, tightening her grip on my arm, she returned her gaze to me and continued speaking in a near whisper this time.
Listen, before you can fully understand the notes, dear boy, you must first understand the space you will place them in. Space can be seen as the birthplace of all things. That is why all things are eventually attracted back to it. This is the principle of zero. Pay attention to what I'm telling you. Your understanding of this will allow you to pack your music with an immeasurable amount of power. The power to change the world and the power for the world to change you. But remember, you are responsible. It is now time for you to go.
She winked at me as she released my arm and stepped down from the chair. My music? What does all this number stuff have to do with music? Hey, wait a minute. How did you know that I play music? Her arms flailed through the air once again as she answered my question in her own way.
Ugh. My dear boy, you are blind, are you? Did you not read the sign on the table? I see everything. Everything. Now give me that book.
Wrapping books was definitely not her forte. I wondered how she got the job. Ripping paper and tape, she tossed the book from side to side, knocking her cards all over the floor. I started to offer assistance, but before I could speak, she did.
You stay wrapped up in the present and leave the wrapping of presents to me.
I didn't want to leave it to her. She was clever with her words, but not with my book. She appeared to be mutilating it. The poor lady could really use some help. She looked up at me and frowned once again. As she continued rapping, thoughts and questions about her flooded my mind. Did she know Michael? Where had she come from? Where did she come up with that crazy number system? How did she know I played the bass? Or did she know? Did she accost other customers this way? Who at this store was crazy enough to hire her? Who convinced her she could rap books? And once again, did she know Michael? I was also curious about the way her eyes seemed to change. I don't remember if they ever changed color, but they definitely changed in some way. Although Sam was only 11, I realized that he had it too. I hadn't connected with Isa's eyes until she stood on the chair. It was then that I knew for sure she was talking about music. The only people I'd ever met with eyes like that were all connected to Michael. It may not make sense, but it was as though music spoke through their eyes. Our chance meeting seemed too much of a coincidence. Had Michael arranged it? He must have. That thought had been eating at me the whole time I was in the store. I finally got up the courage to ask Isis directly. Do you know Michael? Her answer was immediate.
I've known Mr. Jackson since he was just a baby. I was the chief advisor at the Neverland Ranch for 8 years. But Mr. Jordan came to me only once. He had no idea what to do with bird and magic, but since I am an expert on both birds and magic, I quickly set him straight. Mr. Douglas was a local Shakespearean actor before I found him. Now you see where he is today. And Mr. Angelo, I knew him before he converted to the one-name format. He would still be painting stick figures if it weren't for me. Oh, I'm sorry. Which Michael were you referring to, my child?
Okay. Thank you very much for your time. She acted like what she said was true, but I knew differently. I thought I could get a more honest answer from Michael himself. Grabbing my book, I ran out the door. Her voice echoed in the distance as I hurried to my car.
What about the tape?
I was almost home when I realized that Isis's accent was practically non-existent when she spoke to me about music. Was it her or was it me that made the change? I wasn't sure. The thought was washed away when I got out of the car and heard the most amazing music coming from inside my house. I knew that it was Michael playing the guitar. I was happy that he was there. I stood outside listening for a full 2 minutes before his voice interrupted my bliss.
Are you just going to stand there, or are you searching for the key?
I opened the door to see him sitting in his usual chair with his usual grin. It was the same smile I'd just seen on Isis's face as I was running out of the store. Setting down the guitar, Michael answered the question that was on my mind. At least, I think he answered it.
Music is numbers, you know.
So you do know Isis?
Oh, you mean the lady that works at the bookstore mutilating all the books?
Did you arrange our meeting at the store?
Isis is strange.
He ignored my question, but I didn't mention it. As strange as Michael was, it was odd hearing him refer to someone else that way.
But she does know her numbers.
Although I'd missed much of what Isis had said, I knew her information was somehow relevant. Wanting to get a better idea of how numbers relate to music, I asked Michael about it.
They relate in every way.
What do you mean?
Have you ever heard of iambic pentameter?
No. What is that?
It is a rhythmic structure that is sometimes used in writing. Shakespeare used it. So have many others. It's numbers, that's all. How about haiku? Have you heard of that?
I think so, but I don't really know what that is either.
Don't worry about it. Try this one. In music, you do understand how one relates to eight, don't you?
Finally, a question I knew the answer to. The number one, do, is the root. If you count the notes of a major scale, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, one and eight are the same note, an octave apart.
Okay, then. What note would the number zero represent?
I had to think for a while, but then the answer hit me. I've never thought about it before, but the answer is obvious. Zero has to represent space. No notes at all. If zero makes all the other numbers possible, space must make all the other notes possible. I inhaled as a broad smile formed on my face.
Isis would be proud. Now, taking it past the elementary, you can apply this concept to notes, rhythm, technique, dynamic, space, all the elements of music. But let's just stay with intervals for a moment.
Notes and rhythms were one thing, but how I was supposed to relate numbers to the other elements was a mystery to me. I was lost again, and Michael had barely begun.
Fourths are related to fifths. Do you know how? No? Because C to G is a fifth if you are moving up, but a fourth if you are moving down. Going from G to C works just the opposite. Now, a major third is related to a minor sixth. For example, C to E is a major third while E to C is a flat sixth. But a minor third is related to a major sixth. C to D is a whole step, while D to C is a minor seventh. Is C one half step or six steps away from B? Who knows? Let's look at a tritone. You can get from C to F sharp by playing three whole steps or two minor thirds. Going from C to F sharp is the same distance away as going from F sharp to C. That, to me, is a perfect interval. But C to G is called a perfect fifth. Interesting. It's nothing but numbers. Understand?
Absolutely not.
Good. I like an honest answer. All knowledge is not meant to be put in the microwave.
I think I get that.
Many people will study hard trying to understand all that information at once, not realizing that it probably wouldn't make them play any better. Knowledge is not meant to be gathered all at once. Allow Isis's information to simmer. All that she told you will make sense in due time. I'm more interested in what else she had to say about space. Did she tell you about the birds and the bees?
She did say something about birds and magic.
Perfect. Isis is in tune today. What she told you had to do more with your mind than anything else. I told you that music is played with the mind. She gave you some simple clues how to use your mind to its full potential.
You call that simple?
Her message is simple, yes. You allowed her words and numbers to confuse you. Once you learn to do what she suggests and understand the power and value of space, then you will really understand the power of music and the mind.
I don't know how anyone could understand her broken English.
That is because you focused on her words instead of her message. If you would just empty your mind and allow the meaning to enter in, it wouldn't matter what language she spoke. You would understand it just like music. The same process can be used to communicate with anyone or anything, including animals.
What? He couldn't be serious, could he? What happened next was unbelievable. I don't expect you to believe it, because I barely do, and I was there. But here is exactly how I remember it. Michael told me to go outside and look up, so I did.
What am I looking for?
In 12 seconds, a male red-shouldered hawk will fly almost directly above your head.
I didn't understand how he could possibly know that, because he was still inside, sitting in his chair. But once again, he was correct. Wow! How did you know that? Did you hear it coming?
Yes and no.
What do you mean?
I didn't have to hear the hawk. I listened to the other birds.
Cool. What did they say? I was excited to hear his answer. I expected a mystical, magical reply that was going to blow my mind. What he told me was so simple that, well, it blew my mind.
The bird said nothing, or zero, as Isis might say.
What do you mean?
When a bird of prey is on the hunt, most smaller birds know it. So trying their best not to become the hawk's meal, they do their best to become invisible. Many of the other birds will hide and become silent. When I heard the birds stop singing, I knew there was a threat approaching through the air.
How'd you know the threat was in the air and not on the ground?
Birds scream at a threat on the ground because they know they are safe in the trees. If the threat is another bird, the trees may not provide them with adequate cover, so the birds become silent, dive into the bushes, or both.
To let him know that I understood, I said it in my own way. What you're saying, then, is that you listened to the silence the birds created.
Exactly. Very well stated. And how the silence moved across the landscape allowed me to estimate the speed of the hawk's approach.
That was amazing. It was so simple that I couldn't believe I'd never noticed it before. In the past, I had noticed when the birds were singing, but it never occurred to me to pay attention to when the birds weren't singing. How he knew it was a red-shouldered hawk and not a red-tailed hawk or some other bird was still a mystery to me.
Once you pay attention to the silence, or the zero factor, you will learn to decipher the different types of silence. Remember, zero is related to other numbers. That means that zero or silence can change. Your understanding of that will let you know what type of threat is approaching.
Well, I didn't understand. Different types of silence? And how did he seem to always know what I was thinking? Oh well, a little at a time.
Come, watch this.
We walked outside and Michael began making a series of short, high-pitched squeals. He repeated the sounds intermittently until something amazing happened. The red-shouldered hawk circled above us, getting lower and lower. After a few passes, he landed in the trees across the street from my yard.
He might do it.
The hawk then flew down to a lower branch. There was no way I could get myself to believe what was about to happen. It was just impossible. As I had that thought, I could imagine Michael telling me that anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
He said it with a wink of his eye.
Now quiet your mind. Remain still. Remain calm. And allow the silence to speak louder than your thoughts.
How I was supposed to do that was a mystery to me. But I tried anyway. To my amazement, the hawk swooped down from the tree and headed straight toward us. The closer it got, the bigger it looked. I glanced at Michael to see if he was as nervous as I was. He stood there firmly and slowly raised his arm. The red-shouldered hawk, the wild, untamed bird, the huge bird of prey, perched on his arm. It was unbelievable and beautiful at the same time. The bird, with his broad brown breast and his sharp hooked beak, lowered his head and allowed Michael to scratch the back of his neck.
All animals like to be petted. Birds like to be scratched on the back of their necks. It's a hard place for them to reach.
He asked me to stick out my arm, and again, to my amazement, the hawk jumped onto it. I was surprised at how scary it felt. The bird seemed to notice my apprehension and started to flap wildly until Michael reached over and resumed scratching his neck. After a short while, the hawk also allowed me to scratch his neck. It was incredible to see the big bird lower its head in order to be petted, instead of lowering his head to bite my fingers off.
Animals respond to your feelings. You need to get your thoughts out of the way so that your true feelings can speak.
How do I do that?
How do you do that?
Meditation, I guess. That was the first thing that came to mind, so I went with it. I've heard of people using it to clear their minds, but I've never really understood how to do it. Can you teach me how to meditate?
I will show you what to do. You can teach yourself.
When would I ever learn? We said goodbye to our hawk friend and watched him fly away. When we got back inside, Michael closed the window shades and instructed me to sit comfortably in a chair.
Clear your mind. Listen to my voice. And pay attention to how you feel.
He was sitting on the floor behind me and speaking in a soft, soothing voice. He also spoke more slowly than usual. I was still excited about what I just witnessed and couldn't stop thinking about it.
Excitement is a true feeling, and true feelings have power. You can use this power if you know how. The excitement you feel causes your body to tingle. Pay attention to that feeling and allow it to encompass your whole body. Surround yourself with the tingle.
I sat there for a few minutes trying to do what he asked. The more I tried, the harder it became. I could hold on to the tingle only when I didn't try.
This is an exercise in mind and body control. Don't think about it. Allow it to happen. This is the time to use not concentrating. Use intent, not focus, to get the body to do what you ask of it. Clear your mind and use your feelings.
I tried for a few more minutes until I got frustrated and opened my eyes. I don't get it. I'm trying real hard to hold on to the feeling, but it seems as if the harder I try, the more the feeling slips away.
What you've just said may hold the key to your solution. Don't try real hard. Try real easy. Treat it like a game. No pressure. If it doesn't work, big deal. Like holding water in your hand. It takes a gentle process.
I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. Try easy, I told myself. I chuckled at the idea. After what seemed like only a half minute, I was feeling it. I could feel the tingle in my whole body. Michael allowed me to sit with the feeling for a while. Once I did, he told me to make the feeling smaller in size, but not in intensity. He asked me to envision the tingle as a concentrated ball of energy and then place it into the center of my chest. Once I'd succeeded at that and was able to hold it there for a while, he asked me to move the ball around to different parts of my body. He said that any feeling could be moved around that way.
Doing this could be very healing or very damaging. It depends on the intent.
Every time I focused on the fact that I was actually doing it, the feeling would start to go away.
Let it go.
Once I was able to relax and let it go, the feeling came back. It responded in an unexpected way. The more I tried to hold on to it, the faster it would run away. The more I released it, the more it stuck around. I wasn't sure, but it seemed like all I needed to do was use intent to direct the tingle. Physical effort seemed to have the opposite effect. Once I had the tingle where I wanted it, I moved it all around my body until Michael asked me to let it fill my whole body once again. After that was accomplished, he went on.
You're surrounding the tingle with your body. Now allow it to surround you.
If anyone could hear what he was asking me to do, I tried not to think about it. I imagined myself inside the tingle. I could see it all around me as if I was in the middle of a golden, orangish cocoon made of light. Somehow he seemed to know when I'd succeeded at one phase before guiding me on to the next.
Now that it is outside your body, you can either walk away from it, leaving it there, or you can send it somewhere else. Right now, I want you to send the tingle over to me.
I heard him walk across the room, but I didn't open my eyes. How am I supposed to do that? I thought to myself. Or so I thought.
Come on! A child would not ask how. Just allow it to happen. Use your intent. Play like a child.
I didn't know what to do, so I improvised. I inhaled and envisioned my tingle as a golden light surrounding my body. I mentally stepped away from it so that I could see it as its own entity. Upon my exhale, I blew it over toward Michael. I watched it travel slowly across the room. I almost laughed out loud because it looked like a big zero. As soon as I imagined it hitting him, he responded.
Very good. Very, very good. First try. I'm shocked and a little bit jealous. I completely missed the hawk the first time I sent my intent bubble over to him. He had to change tree limbs just to catch it.
My eyes opened on their own. Feeling a bit dazed, I shook my head as I listened to him, not knowing whether or not he was patronizing me. Whichever it was working. I was amazed and elated about what I'd just accomplished. After a moment of celebration, Michael walked up to me and looked me straight in the eyes. I couldn't tell what color they were, but in the darkness of the room, his eyes seemed to glow.
Now, this is real serious stuff. You can treat it like a game when you are just beginning, but even then, your intent must be pure. Once you are confident with your abilities, the power increases. At that time, how you use it has a tremendous effect on all life everywhere. Right now, you can treat it like a game, but know that it is not one.
He gave me a few seconds to think about what he'd said before he leaned even closer to me and continued. I could feel his eyes searching my soul, looking to see if his words were taking root.
You have no idea of the extent of this power. It can be used to heal yourself, someone else, or it can be used to...
He looked across the room. I followed his gaze. There was a flower sitting in a vase on the kitchen table. One ray of sunlight snuck in through the window shade, illuminating a few of the petals. To my astonishment, as I was looking at it, the flower wilted. It literally fell over. I almost did the same thing. My mouth fell open in disbelief. I looked back at Michael. He was smiling. He winked at me and then glanced back at the flower. I looked again, and to my surprise, the flower was alive and perfectly healthy. I looked back at Michael, not knowing what to think.
You believe in that stuff?
I didn't know what to believe. I stood there with my mouth wide open, glancing back and forth between him and the plant. He turned and walked toward the front door. As he opened it, he looked back at me, making a final statement.
Meet me at the Grapevine Cafe at 10. Tonight, we will turn all of it into music.
With a gentle pull of the door, he was gone, and I was left standing in the dark, contemplating yet again what was real and what was not. The Grapevine Cafe is a small nightclub in Nashville located on Elliston Place. Elliston Place is a short street full of thriving businesses during the day and a very active nightlife scene. There are about 3 or 4 different bars and nightclubs on this small street. The cafe only holds about 150 people, but the large window just off the side provides anyone standing outside a great view of the band. On that particular night, the street was packed with people trying to see and hear through the window. I didn't know if Michael had arrived yet, and because of the long line of people, I didn't think I would be able to get in to see if he was already inside. As I approached the club, I noticed someone in the crowd pointing at something. I turned to look and saw a strange sight. There was a man coming up the street wearing a black cape with blue lining, held together at the neck by a silver brooch. An American flag was wrapped around his head, and believe it or not, he was riding a skateboard. As he approached, I thought about sneaking away so that no one would know that the guy was with me. From inside the door, I heard someone shout,
"Michael, your table's ready. They're waiting for you."
I ran to meet him just as he entered the club.
"He's with me,"
Michael shouted as we made our way through the crowded entrance. The look on the faces of the people trying to get in made me glad that I was with him, even if he was wearing a cape. The band was already playing. They sounded amazing. It wasn't until we reached our table that I realized Sam was playing bass. I didn't know they let him in so young.
"There is no other player in town who could play like Sam, including you."
It hurt, but it was true. I knew most of the players in town, and no one had a feel like Sam. He never sacrificed the groove in order to play a lick, and he always played with a smile on his face, as if he actually enjoyed it. That was impressive. Do I need to remind you that Sam was only 11?
"Tonight is a special occasion. These guys don't play together that often. All the band members are at the top of their field. But it is the drummer who I want you to pay attention to tonight. There is no drummer in the world who can regulate the groove the way he does. He is also a master of space. Notice how he uses it to make what he does play stand out."
"What's his name?"
"Not important. Just listen."
Regulate the groove. That was another new concept. I didn't know what it meant, but I was eager to find out. We listened to the band jam for about 45 minutes before I realized that the drummer had not taken a solo at all. He barely played any fills and often left space at the end of phrases rather than fill them up with licks. The groove, I realized, was stronger and more consistent because of it. I could tell that the drummer had chops, but the fact that he wasn't showing them off was impressive. Maybe that's what Michael meant. I would love to play with that drummer. Just then, the guitar player started speaking into the microphone.
"Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you a man, the baddest man in all the land. They call me the teacher. But I'm going to introduce to you the man that taught me all I know, plus some things I don't know. Not to mention a few things I shouldn't know. Fresh off his tour to Never Never Land, 2 stars to the right. The one and only, but never lonely, but bad to the bony. Michael!"
The keyboardist played a fanfare as Michael jumped up onto the table, pulled his cape over the lower half of his face, and bowed down on one knee. He then quickly stood up, holding his cape wide open with both hands as if he were doing his best Batman impersonation. He was quite a spectacle. The crowd didn't know what to think, and neither did I, although I secretly thought the cape was cool. He jumped down from the table, grabbing my hand, and quickly walked to the stage, dragging me along with him. There was no time for me to think.
What do you want to do, Michael?
The guitarist asked.
I want to sing Mustang Sally in C. My friend here wants to play with your drummer. He claims to be a bass player.
I could see Sam laughing as he took off his bass and handed it to me.